Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Tuesday, yet again, it is the Out of Sight podcast on the Liberty Ballers Network. I am your host, Dio Royster. Chill ride, chill vibes as always. I apologize if you can hear it, but I have my air conditioner on, and I know that's not the best for podcasting purposes, but in the interest of chilling my room and my body temperature down, because it was a little bit of a hot one this afternoon, we're just all just going to have to fight through it. I got Dave on the podcast this week after a couple of solo runs, and we're going to talk about some pieces and some news that came down the pipe this past week. Dave, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I enjoy doing the solo stuff, but it's always nice to have somebody to bounce back and forth with, and there's just tempered verbal volleyball between the two of us. So I feel like every once in a while I got to bring you back in.
That's fair.
So let's start here. The Denver Nuggets and the Oklahoma City Thunder made a trade earlier today, and it was reported by our own Sean Kennedy on the site. It was Jermichael Green going to Oklahoma City in exchange for draft picks, draft capital, etc. The main idea to take away from a Sixer standpoint is that it theoretically takes away a landing spot for Tobias Harris. Is that 1,000% true? I mean, the Thunder could still be part of a three-way.
It takes away the scenario where he is completely absorbed and you don't have to take back a ton of money, is my understanding.
Right.
So after July 1st now, because of this deal, they will no longer be one of those teams who could just take an enormous max contract into space and give you back next to nothing in order, you know, for their troubles, basically. So if you had the hope of, we're going to use a pick or a young player or two young players to get them to take Harris and pay him, so that you could pursue Bradley Beal, you would probably need another avenue now to do that, like a sign and trade.
God damn it. Sam Presti ruining any possibility of Josh Giddey to the Sixers. No, I'm kidding. It was a joke. I love me some Josh Giddey highlights. What can I say? So now we're stuck in the camp of, well, I guess it looks like Tobias is going to be here next season.
If that's your default assumption, I think that's pretty fair.
I feel like that kind of is. And at this point, after his last few months in the playoffs and the end of the regular season, if we get that kind of Tobias from game one next season, I'm actually okay with that, I guess. Tobias definitely showed late in the season and in the playoffs how important he is as a two-way player, and maybe not second banana in scoring, but certainly third or fourth.
Yeah, I think he played well enough after the All-Star break in a role that was meant to accommodate and feature James Harden a bit more. I think he did that well and made the cost of salary dumping him, if you were to estimate that in future draft picks, less than it was before the trade, you know, before he played some really good defense against Pascal Siakam. At the end of the day, though, I think if you wanted to break him down, as they say, into like a couple different, maybe more aligned fits, like a couple 3-and-D snipers, I think that would still probably be prohibitively expensive, and it would be difficult to find that team who's interested and paying him $80 million over 2 years. So when you start to really look for trades that might be win-win, it's hard to find one where you're saying, where you wind up saying the Sixers are better now without Tobias, so they should do this deal. Like if you could get somehow Harrison Barnes or, you know, maybe Bogdanovich in Utah along with Jordan Clarkson, maybe you'd feel good about that and you sweeten it for them somehow. But yeah, it's tough to find some that you're like, definitely the Sixers should do that.
I'm wondering, and maybe there isn't an answer to this question, but what kind of team needs a player like Tobias Harris? I feel like that's a question that's not being asked or answered.
Well, it's difficult to answer because...
it really is.
Because if he made $12, $14, $16 million, you start to think of a whole bunch of teams that could use that. But at $38 million, it's like, well, not the teams that want to win a title.
Right. I can't think of one team that's on the cusp of winning a title where they would take on Tobias's money like that.
Like the Lakers would probably happily give you Westbrook in a heartbeat and more if you would do that. But
hard pass.
Yeah. That's the
thing. Because if I get the money correct, then I think it would be like Westbrook for Tobias straight up. And that does not help us in any way, shape or form.
That's fair. Yeah.
Other than, you know, the social media aspect and hilarity of Russell Westbrook and Joel Embiid being on the same team with James Harden.
Yeah. Russ and Harden didn't enjoy playing together in the bubble, I guess we might be able to take away, and now they want to team up again. I think everyone would say no thanks.
No thank you. I do like your idea of Bogdanovich and Clarkson, because I floated this idea to you earlier today on the Slack, and I was asking if, you know, I'm watching the Utah situation like a hawk, because if they're either retooling or blowing it up, like Jordan Clarkson for Danny Green, Shake, and 23, I kind of asked you if that might get the job done, and you disagreed.
Say it again. Say the package again.
So the package, as I had it, was Jordan Clarkson to Philly, and then Utah gets Danny Green, Shake Milton, and number 23. Either Shake or Jaden Springer, whatever you want to do to make the contract work. And you kind of disagreed on face value.
Yeah, because I think that they want to win, and so they can't reasonably expect Danny Green to contribute at all this year. He might not play at all.
Right.
And so what are you getting there that they can plug in? Are you getting Matisse Thybulle in this deal? Are you getting Matisse and the 23rd pick? Because then maybe you can begin to, you know, maybe there's a financial incentive and you have like several things you're looking to do, so you don't want to pay Clarkson's money. But yeah, I just feel like it's a little light on their end.
See, now I'm thinking about the defensive possibilities of Utah with Matisse Thybulle and Rudy Gobert on the same team. And it's intriguing. It's not intriguing to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm putting a long shot bet on the Jazz to win the title next season.
Yeah. It's difficult to imagine them not strongly trying to trade Gobert, isn't it? Like, clearly he and Donovan Mitchell are not best friends.
No.
If you want Donovan to feel more comfortable settling in there for at least the next two seasons, you might want to explore that trade, see what you can get for Rudy.
I don't want to really turn this into a where does Rudy Gobert fit best podcast, but like, I don't know, like the Suns are probably going to lose Ayton for nothing.
Basically, any team that needs to deal with Doncic could at least consider Matisse Thybulle for $4 million.
Yes. Yeah, 1,000%. Anybody in the West that wants an all-NBA second team defender that could definitely hang with Luka, I think is somebody that you would at least pick up the phone and find out if they're available.
That's right, yeah.
Next up is draft talk, because when it's the Sixers off season, we're always talking draft stuff because that's always on the radar of this team. Anybody that you like so far? I know Tom West threw together a piece that chronicled, it was kind of like a hodgepodge of a couple of different sources with their guesses. And then I know you wrote something personally.
Yeah, I mean, Tari Eason, who we have profiled, like, was it Harrison Grimm, I think, who's in love with him. If he slips, he looks like a guy who could, you know, maybe crack this rotation and even absorb some playoff minutes next year.
Harrison loves Tari Eason. He really does.
That's right. So I think there's a few guys that we've looked at or that we're going to look at in the coming days. A lot of people are fans of EJ Liddell. I think there's Jaden Hardy, there's Jalen Williams, all in that range who you think, like, you know what, they could use a wing really badly, and they could use one who's not a liability on either end of the floor. So there's several names that they should really be considering keeping, although you have this overwhelming sense that they're going to be shopping this pick very, very hard, as we've already seen the reports now with maybe pairing it with Danny Green.
Right. And you profile Kendall Brown a little bit, and I'm reading your piece, and if Kendall Brown is, you know, Matisse Thybulle with a more rounded offensive game, he's worth a look. He's worth a shot. That's for sure.
Definitely worth a shot. I mean, basically anytime you can draft the most athletic wing in the whole draft, you got to at least consider it, right?
Usually a good thing.
I think the issue is that he's certainly not the defensive caliber player that Matisse was at Washington.
Right.
And if he's not an absolute plug and play NBA level defender, who we might have thought that Jaden Springer was, and look, he played the whole year in the G League. I don't know how much better his offense would have to be in order to crack the rotation in the first 2 years of his career, given that last time we saw him in action in against UNC, he was in some ways an offensive liability because of his reluctance to shoot, and he didn't space the floor. And you can already imagine how frustrated Joel and Harden would be if the Sixers tried to introduce another player who wasn't willing to take open threes.
This is what kind of scares me about Kendall Brown, and it's in your piece. This is from Mr. Crockpot TPL. The Sixers need wings. Could Kendall Brown be the Sixers pick at 23? The very good 1.49 points per shot around the rim. That's great. The good allowed 0.55 points per isolation possession. Also very good, given there are so many ISO ball handlers and ISO playmakers in this league. But the bad is the 0.79 points per jump shot, and that just screams of either hesitancy or non-confidence in the shot. And I think
no doubt he's hesitant to take them. You could tell that by his 3-point attempts per game, which is very low.
Yes.
And so, you know, you wouldn't mind if that was like a guy like Jordan Clarkson. You see him have a down year shooting the ball in terms of accuracy. He's not a very good player, but when you see that he's willing to shoot it like 8 or 9 times per 36 minutes,
he is a chucker. That's for sure.
Yeah, so that's someone who you can put out there, even if you don't need him to be the world's greatest sniper, if that's what you're looking for. But with the guy who's not attempting them, you worry that he's going to stand there, not draw a defender, and then pass up open looks like Matisse Thybulle was last doing. I mean, people get on Matisse for going 0 for 3 or 0 for 4, but a lot of the times when he dribbled, it was even worse because – you know, you'd rather him just put up the wide open three and take your chances that he shoots it at 25% in an important moment. The alternative is he bounces it and then the shot clock's expiring.
I think if he's there, I do prefer one player over all of the other ones. Like, I know Harrison's got a hard on for Tari Eason. That's fine. But I think I really like the kid out of Santa Clara, Jalen Williams. The three-level scoring, I worry about the combine warrior, though, aspect of that. Is that something that you kind of worry about, too, where they're just, like, all world at the combine and not so much anywhere else?
I mean, I like Jalen Williams, so I wouldn't be too worried about that. Looking right now, ESPN, Jonathan Givony's board, he's the 21st overall player, so he would be getting some value taking him at 23. He's a shooting guard. I'm not too worried that it's like a fool's gold pick if they were to make it, because I do trust their scouting to a degree. I know you could argue they whiffed on Springer when they could have hit on a gem like maybe Herb Jones, but they did hit Herb Tyrese Maxey. So.
What? I need another Sixers player in my generation, in my lifetime, named Herb. I just need it. I need it. I'm sorry. It was denied. It just sucks.
And he's got the greatest nickname, Not on Herb.
Not on Herb. It's great. I love it so much. There's just something about these guards that are coming out. They're three-level scorers, and they can seemingly light it up from a bench perspective. Like, if he has a lights-out summer league, depending on who the coach is, because if it's Doc Rivers, and we'll get into that in the second half, it's just going to suck that he's not going to get minutes and everybody's going to be clamoring for the kid. And I don't know if he should get that kind of pressure, but it's something the Sixers desperately need, somebody on the bench that can provide a little scoring pop.
Yeah. I mean, certainly the more fun thing is that they draft a guy and they play him and he's good. But what are the chances all three of those happen here?
The Sixers draft him. He's good.
Doc
but
plays
they don't
him.
Play him.
Yeah, that's possible.
It's that third one that gives me pause.
Yeah.
And speaking of pauses, we're going to take a little break, a little breather, satisfy some of the sponsors. You're listening to the Out of Sight Podcast on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, where you can find all of your fine Vox Media podcast productions. We will be right back with Dave Early talking a little qualms with the ownership that we also discussed on Slack today. So back in a few minutes.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
It's the Outside Podcast once again, June 14, 2022. I got Dave Early on the line. And here's the thing about Dave and I. Sometimes we go off the cuff with these podcasts because we talk to each other on Slack, and then we get to conversing, and then we're like, okay, save some of this stuff. We should talk about it on the podcast. Something that we brought up earlier today, I don't know who started the conversation. It was likely me, but I'll give you props if it was you. The idea that the ownership group, they're just not really into spending money. And I don't know if that's really the case, but in one specific instance is what we're talking about. And that's the head coach in Doc Rivers. Dave,
yeah.
Go
ahead.
You pointed it out. This ownership group, it's a billion-dollar ownership group, and they are hesitant to shell out another, like, what, 10 mil a year for whatever's left on Doc's contract plus the payment of the new coach.
Yeah, so it takes plenty of tea leaf reading here. I wouldn't have put it as definitively as you have. But
that's what
I think,
do. I'm very blunt, David.
I think if you were to listen to all of the reports of people of the top reporters speculating whether or not Doc would be back as soon as they were eliminated from the Heat, almost none of them, I'm talking like Woj, Ramona Shelburne, Jake Fisher, maybe Brian Windhorst. Almost none of them failed to mention how much money he is still owed, the original commitment that the Sixers ownership made to him.
Right.
Basically getting to the 1 yard line with Mike D'Antoni and then pivoting completely, doing this public 180 and saying, no, Doc's our guy. Let's do 5 years, $40 million. So the statement that the Sixers ownership is not willing to pay isn't fair, because they dropped $90 million on Daryl Morey and Doc in one offseason, knowing that Daryl was coming with maybe canceling their China TV deals, knowing that we were just entering what could be a terrible, you know, pandemic-induced recession. So
true.
They were willing to open it up, and they've been payers of the luxury tax in the last two seasons. So it's not fair to say they're not willing to pay. But like you said, in this specific instance, if you're willing to believe all those reports that the money that they still owe Doc Rivers is still very much a factor for why he's here, and sources have told Liberty Ballers that it's not that, it's that they are all aligned and everybody wants Doc here. So you can make of all that what you will, take it for what it's worth. I do think, I was just talking about this with Trill Bro Dude on his You Know Ball podcast.
Yeah, love that podcast.
It's a great pod, which is where I got the idea for that Utah Jazz trade we talked about earlier. So props to Trill for coming up with that one. And his quick takeaway was the money is a very big factor here for Doc. And then if you are willing to take that assumption, you could say, all right, you know, an ownership group that is worth so many billions of dollars that they're making $5 billion bids on the Denver Broncos couldn't eat what is already a sunk cost, because you got to pay this amount to Doc anyway, and then pay another coach $2 million a year. If that's what the front office wanted to do, you'd hate the idea that someone was hesitant to ask them for that ability or that chance. And that's what a lot of fans are worried about.
I guess the other thing is that, you know, with some owners or just businessmen in general, a lot of them go with the devil they know versus the devil they don't. Like, do we know that if we bring in somebody else other than Doc Rivers, are we sure that this guy can get us a championship? Or should we just run it back with the guy that we know is, you know, championship caliber, allegedly, and then just run this back and see where it goes over the next three seasons? So, like, that aspect I can certainly see.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you wanted to spin the narrative, like, Joel Embiid wanted Mike D'Antoni and Ben Simmons once wanted Tyronn Lue, and Doc was the second choice compromise, so they quickly went and got him, you might be able to spin some sort of, like you said, the devil you know. It would be a big deal. The money is there. It would be expensive. It's not a guarantee that we would improve this coach. Sure, you could make the case that Joel Embiid has been an MVP caliber player under him twice now, and so Joel may very well be saying, I want him back because I don't want the alternatives, which we build the offense around, not me, like we have in the past. I don't know what I'd be getting either, so I'm not willing to say, please change coaches. Daryl Morey might have needed Doc personally to sign off on him even receiving this $50 million deal that he got, because Doc was here first. And it's been reported by your own Weitzman that Doc's chief of staff said, yes, Doc did need to sign off on Daryl coming aboard. So it wouldn't be surprising if he felt some loyalty there and say, all right, at least let him have 2.5-3 years. I wouldn't be here if not for his sake. So,
and it's also definitely not a given that Doc Rivers can't win a championship in Philly. Like,
absolutely.
He's certainly capable with the talent that he has.
And if you thought he might improve your chances of, like, luring or attracting a guy like Zach LaVine, then who cares if he's not your favorite coach?
Right. If Doc helps deliver like Brad Beal, or, you know, I don't know if Dame Lillard is even still an option anymore. I haven't heard anything on that front in like 6 months. But if Doc is one of those catalysts that brings in that true third guy, then, I mean, why the hell not keep him around? Like, I know he's not without his flaws. His rotations are off. People are getting really upset with that. People are getting upset that he's not playing the right people. The Paul Reed stands out there, including myself. But who knows what this new coach, whoever it is, like D'Antoni, Atkinson's off the market, so forget all that. Darvin Ham is off the market, so I don't know who that next guy is to bring in. And you're immediately saying to yourself, oh, okay, I like this direction. It's a lot better. I think what would be way more beneficial is if Doc was more amenable to, I guess, for lack of a better term, advice.
Yeah, the fair knocks on Doc are that he hasn't adjusted enough to a modern era. I mean, he was trying for years with some tremendous teams to get out of the second round with the Clippers. And as soon as he left, Tyronn Lue got them there. Tyronn Lue used small ball quite a bit. He used young players quite a bit. And a lot of the things that Doc has been known for not wanting to experiment with has worked for the Clippers. I mean, they were giving the Suns fits in a series that they didn't even have Kawhi Leonard, playing guys like Nick Batum at the five. So you see some of these things and you think Doc's had a failure to adjust in games within a series, and he's had failure to adjust with the changing times of the NBA. Both of those are valid concerns. Many of the criticism Sixers fans were there with him before he even got to Philadelphia. So hopefully he could be a little bit more adaptive and open to things that Morey, for example, has put forth publicly, like, you know, maybe when Joel sits, you could try an up-tempo spacing shooters lineup. He used to say that about Ben Simmons, but you'd certainly like to see it with James Harden more than we saw last year.
I would like to see some Tobias at the five action. That could be fun.
Let's see, where are the radical experiments that Morey became famous for once upon a time when Joel sits, at least, at the very least?
Where's that innovation where you're just like, oh, wait, they're playing. Wait a minute. Is that James Harden on the floor with a bunch of shooting? Is that Robert Covington playing the five? What is this?
Yeah, PJ Tucker, 6'5", and you've got him on the center.
And the Rockets were winning games.
Yeah, you can't guarantee that it's going to work, but you know that just playing Dwight Howard half a season alongside Ben Simmons, and then, you know, marrying Ben Simmons' minutes to Joel for the entirety of the second half, or playing Dwight Howard or playing DeAndre Jordan at the expense of Paul Reed. Just not experimenting is not going to work.
Especially, like you said, in the modern NBA where there aren't – small ball is definitely a thing. And if you have – the Sixers definitely have the roster to put together like a really decent small ball lineup with Tobias at the five, Niang at the four – I guess Matisse at the three with Harden and Maxey, and then just start running fools off the court, with the exception of maybe Niang, because, you know, he's a minivan. He sputters a little bit. It's hard to get his engine going a little bit.
That's fair.
But like you said, that's some stuff that I would like to see. And I'm not saying for like a full, you know, half of a game or anything, but, you know, 4 or 5 minutes could be fun.
Every minute that Joel sits is – you should be experimenting, because you know you're overmatched. You know you lose those minutes pretty much. And you know the things that Doc wants to do, which is just play Dwight, play Drummond, play DeAndre, is not going to work by the second round.
Right. I totally agree. When Joel Embiid is on the bench, that is when you should be taking wild swings, because we know that this bench unit, if you run a traditional lineup, they are going to get housed.
And so much of the time we talk about what can they do to get a guy like Tyrese Maxey, James Harden going. Well, that's, you always see when Joel's not even in the lineup on a particular night and Maxey drops 30 or Harden shoots, you know, 10 more shots than he normally does. And it's like, oh, right.
Space the floor
and give him the ball.
All right. Well, we'll have to take this podcast and then put it on an MP3 or something and hand it to Doc, or maybe maybe, just maybe, Daryl Morey subscribes to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, which would be fantastic.
Because we hoped he did back in 2020 when we could have told him, just make sure you don't play Dwight and Ben too much.
Dave, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten a phone call from a weird number from like Delaware, or it just says scam likely. And I'm like, wait a minute, is this Daryl calling me to tell me that he didn't like something I said on the podcast?
That would be fun.
I can't tell you how many times I've lost sleep thinking that might happen. And just the nightmare of like getting that phone call from Jazz or Paul and just be like, yeah, Daryl's gonna call you. I'm like, what? What did I say? I'm only speaking the truth out here, Dave. I'm sorry.
You got to do it, and hopefully you get that call one day.
Listen, I know I just started a new job, but you know what, Daryl, if you need some help in the front office, just call me up, my man. I'm just saying. Dave, always a pleasure talking to you. Love spinning yarns with you, and I just enjoy our talk so much.
Yes, this is a lot of fun. Love spinning the yarn.
What's the scene up in Brooklyn right now?
I'm actually in Manhattan right now. It's starting to feel like the density, you know, the air gets a little thicker. It's a little
I was more talking about the Brooklyn Nets, Dave, but oh. I'm glad you gave me the weather report from Manhattan. I appreciate that, because I'm actually headed up there next week, I think.
People are talking about should they be trading Seth Curry, Ben Simmons for John Collins.
Interesting.
But what should happen with Patty Mills? Should he be shopped because he wasn't a big playoff? And obviously Kevin Durant has been tweeting up a storm, questioning things like leadership and playmaking, like
from his real account or from burner accounts,
the real deal
from KD Trey 5. How about that? All right.
Yeah. Easy money sniper, KD nice. Trey.
Well, keep in touch and, read all of Dave's columns, follow him on social media. It's still at David Early.
Yeah, at David Early on Twitter.
He writes for Clutch Points.
No, just Liberty Ballers now.
Okay, he just writes for Liberty Ballers now, but he's still very much in the he's got the finger on the pulse of the Brooklyn Nets fans, which we appreciate, because you know what, they're rivals, so we need to get those inside scoops. Dave, always love having you, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, thank you.